Hey guys.
Hey John, what's up?
You know, the temperature's about 88. Might hop in the water plug just for old time's sake.
Okay, why are you saying this?
Yeah, I got sneaks on, but I need a new pair, because basketball courts in the summer got girls there.
Wait, is he quoting lyrics from DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince song Summertime?
Okay, he is, but I think I get where he's going, okay? It's summertime. What happens in the summertime? You have big, important governmental bodies doing big, important things, like the legislature passing the state budget and the U.S. Supreme Court issuing a decision in a partisan gerrymandering case that has big implications for Wisconsin.
Yeah, and it's late in the day, but I ain't been to the court yet. Hustle to the mall to get me a short set.
Okay, maybe he's just into summertime, but yes. We can work with this. Yes. Let's channel that energy. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson.
I'm Laurel White.
And I'm John K. Wilson.
This week on the podcast, let's talk about all that summertime news.
It's late in the day and I ain't been on the court yet. Hustle to the mall to get me a short set. Yeah, so I guess we all wish it was 1991, the year that song Summertime from DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince came out. Might be hitting up a barbecue or something. But we have news to talk about here on the podcast, so let's get to it.
All right, we sure do. Want to start with the news from the U.S. Supreme Court this week?
Let's do it.
This wasn't Wisconsin's partisan gerrymandering case that we have talked so much about over the years, but this was a case involving partisan gerrymandering and whether the federal courts could get involved in that. Laurel, what did they decide?
So basically what the court decided is that they don't have the authority to decide on these partisan gerrymandering cases. And they've had several of these cases come before them, including the Wisconsin case that Sean actually went to D.C. to cover the arguments for. And we just got a ruling in that just about a year ago from right now. And they said that they declined to rule on it because there wasn't standing and kind of different arguments. But I think people in Wisconsin thought, all right, they're declining to hear on our case specifically, but there are these other gerrymandering cases that if they rule on, it's going to affect our maps, right? Because it's a federal court. And
yeah, I mean, the question was whether the federal courts can get involved and say when a partisan map becomes too partisan. Mm-hmm. Can the courts decide these cases on partisan grounds and draw that line of when, you know, it's so partisan that you have, affected the constitutional rights of voters from the political party that's not in power, you know, who got gerrymandered out of power, basically. Mm-hmm. And when Anthony Kennedy was on the court, he kept that door open. He wasn't quite sure how the courts would do it, but he said that this is a serious problem facing American democracy, and the court should be open to some kind of a metric to look at this. Anthony Kennedy, I think when we reported on this a year ago, the verb that was used widely was that the court punted.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say, yes, you can. Here's the metric. Here's the case for us. And they didn't say no. But what the court said this week was much different. They said no. They did not punt. They said that the federal court system will not be deciding partisan gerrymandering cases, period. So you had a new justice on the court there, Brett Kavanaugh, and that 5-4 majority with Justice John Roberts writing the opinion said the courts cannot get involved in this. So it doesn't officially yet, I don't think, officially close Wisconsin's case, which was still alive and still maybe going to have arguments in July or sometime. Mm-hmm. But I would say that we're going to, you know, we will find out pretty soon that that case is officially dismissed, because if you can't take up partisan gerrymandering cases in the federal court system,
it doesn't really matter what the argument is.
No.
Right?
Right. It's done. The court will come back and say, we're out of here.
Right. Peace. We don't have the authority to rule on this subject. No matter what your particular sort of like angle is on it, that doesn't matter to us because this isn't our jurisdiction. This isn't our ball game. This is not our barbecue, as they say. They don't say that.
Yeah.
No one says that. But
I think, so cliche, Laurel.
I know. I'm sorry. But I think the thing that before we move on from this, which is obviously like a huge decision, I was really struck by something somebody said on Twitter this week, which is they believed that this was the most consequential case or ruling from the Supreme Court since Citizens United. And we know how much people talk about Citizens United and the power of, you know, organizations to have free speech, like people have free speech, businesses. And, you know, I think as we look back on this ruling years from now, I think people are going to talk about this in the sense that the court stepped away from ruling on gerrymandering.
I would not be surprised. It's a pretty big deal for the court to say that we just can't get involved in this, because now that, I guess when Kennedy left the door open, legislatures around the country had to at least be a little bit cautious about being too overtly partisan when they drew the lines. Now that the U.S. Supreme Court has said, you can be political. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can be political. They can really be out there and say, yeah, we gerrymandered you out of existence, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Lawmaker, because we wanted to. You're from the wrong political party.
There's really no sheriff in town. In a certain sense, like, I think people might have had a sense of, like, what you were saying is they might have been a little bit more cautious, thinking that somebody might crack down on them later. But now there's really no fear of that, right? There's no sort of, like,
not on partisan grounds. Because in one of the cases, I think it was in North Carolina, you had one of the lawmakers who drew the maps actually out there testifying and saying, look, I just want to be clear. We did this for political reasons. We didn't do this. This is not a racial gerrymander, which we should talk about before we move on from this topic. This is strictly political. So I think if lawmakers in the future use that phrasing, I guess, to talk about maps.
Framing
to talk about maps, then they can do it in the eyes of the federal courts. So does this mean that we're never gonna have lawsuits about gerrymandering again? No, it does not mean that.
So they could bring a case on racial grounds.
They can bring cases that... So for years, there have been cases, you know, challenges brought to redistricting plans based on the idea that they're a violation of the Voting Rights Act or other, you know, traditional redistricting criteria. They will find a way to get these things into court, definitely. I mean, there was a lawsuit before this partisan gerrymandering lawsuit this time. There was a lawsuit against Wisconsin's map in 2012. And, I mean, it was really interesting. They didn't get many, you know, Democrats didn't get many districts changed out of it. But I guarantee you the next map will be in federal court. I guarantee freaking tea you.
Whoa. Whoa, Sean man. Johnson. Whoa. Dropping the, that's emphatic language there.
It'll be a little buddy. Different though. I know. I'm sorry. Gonna have to bleep that out. The other thing is that depending on where you live, there are other ways that redistricting could be constrained. State courts are still a wide open avenue for redistricting lawsuits. You could have partisan gerrymandering claims in state courts under state constitutions. Mm-hmm. So is that going to happen in Wisconsin? If a Republican legislature draws the map and we have a 5-2 conservative majority on the Supreme Court, it might not be 5-2 by the time that got to the state Supreme Court, but is that going to go well in the state Supreme Court?
Likely not.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
Well, and that's not something. So when I did the story yesterday, I talked to the leader of the group that brought the federal case against Wisconsin's maps. And he was basically saying, like, we are going to pursue avenues to changing the way we draw maps in Wisconsin outside of the courts. So I feel like at least for that organization, they're kind of like, OK, the courts are done for us. We're going to focus on state level legislation, things like nonpartisan redistricting commissions. That's something that the governor actually put in his budget proposal and Democratic lawmakers have pushed for, is it safe to say, several years now?
Yeah, they've pushed that for a while now. I think there will be more focus on that proposal now that this federal court challenge is over. Because back then, you know, I think the federal litigation was sort of the big show when it comes to redistricting. And now that that's not an option, then state laws like something to set up a nonpartisan redistricting commission will get more focus.
I feel like, you know, this is something that was part of the governor's budget. Obviously, the bill's been rolled out more than once. But I don't, off the top of my head, know where Republican leaders stand on the commission. I don't know if they've made public statements about...
Speaker Voss very emphatically against it.
Yeah.
He says, like, you can't really... I mean, nobody's really nonpartisan. You can't really create a nonpartisan commission to do this stuff. They're going to have... It's going to have a political leaning.
It's part of the argument, too. So we got a little cameo appearance by former Governor Scott Walker yesterday. I haven't gotten to quote... former Governor Walker in a story for a while.
On the Twitters?
But he was on the Twitters weighing in on this because he's actually the financial director he has some title to do with money for a national Republican redistricting group. So he weighed in on the decision yesterday. And part of his language was about unelected bureaucrats making decisions about maps and courts weighing in. And I feel like that's language that we've heard before about kind of the power of certain groups to do things in Wisconsin. And I could see the speaker talking about that. Like, if we have a commission drawing maps, that isn't appropriate because lawmakers who are chosen by the people should be the people doing the maps.
That is the other thing that Speaker Voss typically says.
Yeah.
It's the
unelected bureaucrats.
Right. It's the elected legislature that should do these maps under the Constitution.
All right, guys. Well, no time to sit back and unwind. We have more news to get to. So what is up next?
How about the Wisconsin state budget passing the full legislature this week?
Man, you know it's a big news week when we're like, oh, yeah, and second, the budget. Passed.
Yeah, the budget definitely dominated our time this week, but it goes into second place here on the old news-o-meter.
The budget is but for 2 years. The Supreme Court ruling could be but for many more.
Poetry by Laurel White.
Well, it takes a long time for these things to... We're talking about our last topic, John. Sorry.
Yeah, whoops, sorry.
But really, it takes a long time for the court to change and to move on this stuff. Took a long time for Kennedy to go from, I might be open to setting a partisan gerrymandering standard to punting and then retiring. Okay, back to the budget. The budget passed this week, passed the Assembly, passed the Senate. There was a question about where are they going to get all the votes in the Senate because there are two Republicans who said they were going to vote no. And we found out this week how they did it. And there was one Republican in particular, there was a lot of attention paid to a provision put in to win the vote of Senator Chris Kapinga, a conservative Republican from Delafield?
Yep.
Brookfield.
Delafield.
Delafield. So Kapinga had been in the past part of this coalition of conservative senators who they held up the last budget in 2017. And so that coalition, just to remind everybody, Senator Dave Craig, Senator Steve Noss, you had Senator Dewey Strobel, Senator Chris Kapinga. And so this year, Noss and Craig said, we're voting no. Strobel said, I'm voting yes.
Strobel was on the Joint Finance Committee this time around.
He was, helped draw up that budget. So that kind of changes his perspective on it. So Kapinga was the question mark here. And they got him on board. And one of the ways that they did it is they added a provision to the budget that would allow for the direct sale of Teslas in Wisconsin. Right now, Tesla has to go through dealers. The way that other automobile companies do in Wisconsin, you have to go through dealerships. Tesla doesn't want to do that. They want to sell directly. And Kapinga has supported a bill in the legislature that would let them do that. They put the bill in the budget. But then there was some other stuff around that Kapinga story that made it more interesting and dramatic, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, so basically what happened was when the Assembly was doing its final debate on the budget Tuesday, these amendments start rolling out that are aimed at getting all of those senators on board, right? So there were some other things that weren't quite as exciting as fast cars. There was like money for more DA positions, which is something Senator Andre Jacques wanted.
Right. And he was one of those senators who was also, he wasn't in the Senate last time around.
He wasn't there last time, but we kind of thought he might be on the fence a little
bit. We did, because Senator Andre Jacques is sort of, he can be sort of a thorn in the side for leadership.
Sure.
Does his own
thing. He has an independent
streak. He does. And so he wanted DA positions. Not that he was the only lawmaker who wanted it. But those got in there.
Yeah. And then there was a thing about changing the study on mileage-based fees tweaked it a little bit, so there was some tolling language in there.
Yeah, it's got to go to the full legislature now, not just the finance committee. Yeah. And yes, it now says mileage-based fees and tolling we're going to study. Mm-hmm. They're being a little more explicit about it. This is a tolling study, people.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to mention those other things. They were all kind of happening at the same time this Tesla thing happened. But the reporting that was spurred by the Tesla decision or the Tesla amendment got some more attention because it was pretty easy to trace this to Senator Kapinga. He's pushed for this Tesla change. And I think the nuance that made it even bigger was that reporting out there said, you know, he has a business that sells Tesla parts.
From the Journal Sentinel.
From the Journal Sentinel. And so Kapinga's pushing to get this Tesla provision in, and he might personally financially benefit from it, right? That's kind of the implication. He has a business. So that's Tuesday. Wednesday morning, Kapinga calls a press conference to sort of clear the air about this.
9:45 press conference. Yeah. The Senate is debating the budget at 10.
Yeah.
Laurel, tell us about it.
So I will.
You were there.
So I was there. So we go down and Kapinga comes in and it basically says that the reporting was based on half-truths, was the little phrase that he used, and kind of a personal attack on him. He said, you know, I do have this small business, but it's really more of a hobby than it is a business. He said he doesn't make any money from it. Basically what he does is he buys Teslas, takes them apart, rebuilds them, sells the parts that he doesn't need. And he says that he does this sort of for family members and friends and, you know,
He's called himself a gearhead, right?
Yeah, exactly. Some people pointed out he has a website for this business, the part selling. And mm-hmm. he said, you know, my daughter built that website. It's kind of a little personal project, learning how to do web design. He got pretty emotional, actually, during this press conference and talked about kind of the effect of these implications that he was doing sort of a quid pro quo thing on the budget for personal gain. And the effect on his family of those reports, you know, sort of like it was very personal to him, these reports. So he actually also said, I think interestingly, at the end of the press conference, after kind of clarifying what this Tesla business does, he said, you know, I'm going to vote for this budget and I might have voted for it even without this Tesla provision. He was like, This is something I clearly wanted, but I don't think it was enough to push me over the edge of voting yes. So that was sort of how Kapinga framed it very, very shortly before the budget vote. And then we didn't hear anything from him after that. I mean, he didn't say anything on the floor. Not many Republican senators said much on the floor, actually.
So this isn't the end of the budget process, though. It's passed both chambers, and now it goes to the governor's desk, and there's still stuff to be seen about what he will do.
Yes, the governor has still not, as we are podcasting now, has not tipped his hand on what he's going to do with that veto power that he has. He hasn't said whether he's going to veto the whole thing or whether he's going to partially veto it. And if he is going to partially veto it, we certainly are not going to know what he's going to do until he gives us more hints or just releases the list.
And I think one thing of note, too, the partial vetoes that he might or might not do, he has less of a canvas on which to partially veto things.
He does, because the budget bill itself that Republicans are sending him is much shorter than every budget bill from the past two decades. The one that passed the Finance Committee was about a 500-page bill. Every bill over the past couple decades, I know this because I looked at every bill over the
you
past
did.
Couple decades, and yeah. I looked at the page numbers because it's what the people want.
This is
John
the
Johnson throwing out the hits.
Want.
Okay, but I was surprised. Like every bill has been 1,000-plus pages. In fact, the average bill that Republicans passed when Walker was governor was 1,400 pages. So it's not like they are averse to long budget bills, but when the governor is a Democrat, they are giving him less to work with.
Yeah.
And it's not just the length of the budget. They were very meticulous about their wording in this budget. Adding amendments on the last day, changing like may not to can not or shall not. You know, it's mm-hmm. like they, all these little phrases in there where they are bracing for these vetoes that are to come. I think it's noteworthy that John Nygren, the budget committee co-chair, has on his staff one of Governor Walker's budget directors. So they kind of know how the game works, I guess, and are bracing for stuff that may yet come. Just worth pointing out, Evers still has very strong veto power. Republicans took a lot of powers away from him in December in that lame duck session, but the veto power for the Wisconsin governor is still very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that is a lot of budget news, but we're still not done.
You going to listen to this during your barbecues, people? Like, oh yeah, are they going to talk about administrative rules? Yes, we are.
Oh yeah.
This is the dessert you've all been waiting for.
What a it's like we're serving the vegetables last.
So about those administrative rules.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you guys are all excited now. We said administrative rules.
This is it.
My heart's a pounding.
Okay, we've talked about this case a lot over the years on the podcast. We did an entire episode about this way back when called, I think it's Complicated was the name of the podcast, because this case is complicated and administrative rules are kind of complicated. So I'm just going to throw it to Laurel White to explain it this week because she did the coverage of this case. Laurel.
Yes. So basically, this case started when Governor Evers was the state school superintendent and Governor Walker was in office. And it was a fight over whether or not the state school superintendent had to run administrative rules that he wrote for his department by the governor's office. There was a state law that had been passed called the RAINS Act. Regulations in Need of Executive Scrutiny, I believe, is what the acronym stands for.
Oh, you remember it now.
Because they want to rein in those bureaucrats. Is that the idea?
Reining in the unelected bureaucrats. But Governor Evers, when he was superintendent, Evers said, you know, the state school superintendent is an elected office. It's not an appointed office. He has executive power, constitutional office. And so he shouldn't have to run his rules by the governor.
And it wasn't just Governor Evers saying this when he was state superintendent of schools. He had the backing of the state Supreme Court when he was state superintendent. They agreed with him in a ruling that was handed down in 2016.
Exactly. But this new case was brought by a conservative advocacy group, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They said, yes, there was this 2016 ruling, but it was I think the word that they used is fractured ruling. They said there wasn't consensus. The people that ruled on the case that said, yes, this law is okay, or not okay, they all had different reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a unifying decision by the court. So Will, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, said, we just want to try this again because we don't feel like the ruling was very strong. We need the court to weigh in on this. And so they got what they wanted. The 2019 court disagreed with the 2016 court and said that the state school superintendent does have to get that approval from the governor's office.
Yeah, but if they didn't like the fractured ruling thing, and this one, they got an opinion and a concurrence and another concurrence.
Yeah, this is clearly a complicated issue. Rebecca Bradley had her own decision. Daniel Kelly had his own decision, in addition to the majority decision.
Right, they're concurring opinions.
Yeah.
Like, I agree with them, but I want to say some other things.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly's was especially interesting because it was just, I agree with the majority except for paragraph 17. We both remember it because it was so weird. Yeah. It's like,
It's so funny because normally, like, Rebecca Bradley's opinion, for example, was pages for concurring opinion. And then you just get this, like, sentence from Daniel Kelly, like, agreed, except for 17.
Yeah.
It really
and that's stuck
out
in our head because it's unusual. So we look at paragraph 17 in the majority opinion that was written by Justice Patience Rogensack, and it says, quote, we have long recognized that the delegation of the power to make rules and effectively administer a given policy is a necessary ingredient of an efficiently functioning government. Justice Kelly's like, I do not recognize
that. I
don't think bureaucrats are necessary to run a government, essentially.
All we know from his dissent is that, like, I don't agree with that sentiment.
That.
But that's one paragraph that he's pretty specifically not signing on to.
Yeah.
So I guess the takeaway for me is that it is another of many decisions from this conservative majority that seems to give the legislature more power, or at least recognize the power of the legislature above other office holders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they basically said that, so just to get like a little wonky, and I promise I'll go kind of fast, is that Evers' argument was that he was exercising executive power when he was making those rules, and so therefore he shouldn't have to have approval by somebody else. But in the court's decision, they said actually he wasn't using executive power when he created rules. He was using legislative power that was given to him by the legislature, and therefore a law made by the legislature about rulemaking trumps his executive action. So if that makes any sense.
Hot fire.
Yes. Whoa. Yes.
Okay.
Talk about going out with a bang, huh?
Guys, if you made it to the end of this podcast, we love you. Thank you for listening.
We salute you.
Well, guys, I got to pop back to the crib to change clothes once more because I've been invited to a barbecue that's starting at 4.
How many times do you change clothes in a day?
I don't know. Will Smith apparently changes quite often.
He was
like Madonna.
Like, I think he was splashing in a fire hose and playing basketball, so I can understand it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol bureau chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme and put your car on cruise and lay
back because it's summertime. If you're looking for something fresh to listen to while riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos, or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzos, subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can also find it on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics. Respond to summer madness. The weather is hot and girls are dressing less and checking out the fellas to tell them who's best. Riding around in your Jeep or your Benzos or in your Nissan sitting on Lorenzos.